Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 18th of May, 2015, the podcast that every day has the blues. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me this week is Chris Hangartner. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Shane.
And yeah, that opening is a tribute to the late blues legend B.B. King, who died the day before we recorded this.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, that's horrible. I love blues.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was up there. I think he was like 79, 80, something like that. So
I think he was almost 80, but yeah, you know, poor guy. You know, I haven't heard a lot of his music, but from what I've heard, he was very influential.
Oh, he's just awesome. So you were right, BB. I'll be missing you. Okay, let's befuddle the news of the bogus.
Okay.
So now and then we cover Supreme Court cases.
Yeah.
And we had that Supreme Court special a couple of years ago. We've basically found that the Supreme Court actually protecting your rights like they're supposed to is pretty much a 50-50 proposition, which is better than we get from Congress, but still.
Well, what do you expect?
Well, judges are politicians in robes, and we ignore that at our own peril.
And not to mention, most Americans can't even identify the judges.
So the Foundation for Economic Education has published their list of 15 Supreme Court decisions that shredded the Constitution. And they're using a three-pronged standard for this. First, the case has to be still guiding precedent. Second, it has to be inconsistent with the Constitution. And third, it either has egregious consequences for individual liberty or is, I'm just going to read this part, clearly ideological or policy-driven rubbish as a matter of constitutional law, whether or not I happen to like the consequences.
That's like about 98% of all laws passed by Congress.
Well, there's a lot of them they had to pare down. One of the things that they were excluding was Dred Scott, which ruled that black people aren't citizens. That clearly doesn't apply.
Well, yeah, because that was unfortunately during a darker time of America's history, back when technically a black, you know, was considered only 3/4 of a real person.
3/5.
Oh, 3/5. Oh,
yeah.
Legally speaking.
Yeah, and I mean, they were slaves. They couldn't vote, things like that. Plessy versus Ferguson, that was the separate but equal decision about segregation. That no longer applies.
Yeah.
Buck versus Bell, which allowed for compulsory sterilization of people like, you know, autistics or Down syndrome or whatever.
Wasn't there at one point a policy which demanded that homosexuals become sterilized?
I think so, although if you think about it, that's kind of dumb, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
Who is the least likely to have children?
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're homosexual, you gotta get sterilized. Why? I'm not attracted to women. I'm not gonna have a baby with anyone anytime soon.
Yeah, I like what George Carlin pointed out. It's like, if you're pro-life, you should love gay people. Talk about people who are pretty much guaranteed never to have an abortion.
Yeah.
Now, the other one he excludes, which I'm gonna disagree with, is Korematsu versus United States. That was the one that upheld FDR's Japanese internment camps.
Oh, yeah, the concentration camps, only we don't call them concentration camps.
Yeah. Well, they were called that at the time.
And, you know, to our defense, they weren't as bad as the ones the Germans had, but still, you know.
Well, they weren't pushing them into ovens or anything. But
yeah, it's just that the only problem the Japanese had there was that when they arrived, 90% of the camps weren't even finished construction, so nothing worked there.
Oh, I remember George Takei talking about, he was 5 years old going into one of those camps. He played Sulu on Star Trek.
Yep.
And he said that the camps weren't ready, so he and his family had to stay in the barn.
Oh, yep. They slept on mats. If you had to go to the bathroom, they often went in a hole because the toilets were often overflowing because the plumbing never worked. Another thing that doesn't get told was that we also interned German and Italian Americans during World War II, but sadly, no one acknowledges them. In fact, the U.S. government officially denies it, although there's plenty of hardcore evidence which shows that some 10,000 German Americans, you know, got interned. And one thing I really hated was one social justice warrior said, well, who cares? They were white and they were small compared to the Japanese Americans. I'm like, it doesn't matter. They still got imprisoned.
Yeah, I mean, it's the principle of the thing.
Yeah. Oh, not to mention the cruel irony was that some of them were actually German immigrants who came to America to escape the Nazis.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you were a German immigrant or at least one of your parents was a German immigrant, you were supposed to go to the internment camp. As opposed to the Japanese internment camps, which I think was basically you had slanted eyes. That was why.
Yeah, I've even heard that some non-Japanese were sent there by accident. I remember hearing a story about how a Korean family got sent there.
Koreans and Chinese, yeah.
Yeah, despite the fact that they showed their birth certificate that said we were born in Korea, although... Oh, the thing is, the officer justified it by saying, well, Korea is a Japanese territory, so you're legally Japanese.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Korea at the time was, even though they were completely different cultures, was a Japanese territory.
Well, that's a whole other thing we can get into about a failure of Americans' foreign policy back in the late 19th century, going on to that. And all the way up to the Korean War, none of that would happen if America hadn't been it. But we won't get into that right now. But Neil deGrasse Tyson on National Geographic Channel has a TV version of his Star Talk podcast. On the very first episode, he mentioned the Japanese internment camps because he's interviewing George Takei. But he was saying, like, you know, it's interesting. We didn't incarcerate German people during the war. And I tweeted to him. I was like, actually, Neil, we did. And I pointed him to the Wikipedia page for it. And he hasn't replied to it, but I hope he at least saw it.
Yeah.
So we'll know to correct that. Now, of course, we don't have those internment camps anymore. But there is one thing that Korematsu did that set a big precedent that's still being used today, which is basically government can do anything they want as long as they have a compelling governmental interest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's been used in all sorts of cases, excusing violations of the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments and many others of our basic rights as
well. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so his top case that did the most to infringe on our rights is 1937's Helvering v. Davis. And this upheld the constitutionality of Social Security because Congress has a general power to spend money on whatever it considers to be in the general welfare.
Yeah, and I believe you did a video about that that says what constitutes the general welfare, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the Constitution lectures.
Yeah, the biggest problem with general welfare is that so many people's, like, if you make a criticism of certain social policies like that are supposed to, you know, help like the needy, but they don't do anything. People say, why do you hate the general welfare? And it's like, well, that's not the point of the Constitution. You know, general welfare, constitutionally speaking, is where every single U.S. citizen has to benefit, both rich, poor, middle class, black or white, not a group that Congress thinks needs it.
Well, it was an umbrella that served as a limitation for the others. Like, they had the power to post roads, but only if those roads are done for the general welfare, not like, you know, the bridge to nowhere in Alaska everyone was talking about a few years ago. But the whole point is, our Constitution is one of enumerated powers. And this just completely got rid of that. That whole long list of powers in Article 1, Section 8, meaningless.
Yep.
Meaningless. And this was refuted long ago, even before the ratification of the Constitution, by James Madison in Federalist Number 41, quote, "It has been urged and echoed that the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States amounts to an unlimited commission to exercise every power which may be alleged to be necessary for the common defense or general welfare." In other words, exactly what the court said. "No stronger proof could be given of the distress under which these writers labor for objections than their stooping to such a misconstruction. Had no other enumeration or definition of the powers of the Congress been found in the Constitution than the general expressions just cited, the authors of the objection might have some color for it, though it would have been difficult to find a reason for so awkward a form of describing an authority to legislate in all possible cases." In other words, there's easier ways to say Congress can do whatever they want. "But what color can the objection have when the specification of the objects alluded to by these general terms immediately follows and is not even separated by a longer pause than a semicolon? If the different parts of the same instrument ought to be so expounded as to give meaning to every part which will bear it, shall one part of the same sentence be excluded altogether from a share in the meaning, and shall the more doubtful and indefinite terms be retained in their full extent, and the clear and precise expressions be denied any signification whatsoever?" In other words, are we to just ignore these clauses that just say specific things and just go with the one that's kind of vague in general?
That kind of reminds me about how some anti-gun people interpret the Second Amendment. People say, no, the Second Amendment was only about, you know, forming a militia run by the state, yet it ignores, you know, the part that says the right for the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They leave out that part.
Yeah, the people, not the militia members or the government or whatever.
Not to mention, as you pointed out in one of your videos, militia had a different meaning back in those days. A lot of our military composed of militias, you know, who just came from neighborhoods who were a bunch of guys who knew how to shoot guns, and they got together and agreed to defend, you know, their area if it came under attack.
Well, and not only that, the purpose of the Bill of Rights, as the Ninth Amendment says, not to enumerate the only rights that we have, but to give specific declaratory protection to rights that, when government infringes them, will lead to greater despotism. So if government can infringe the right of freedom of speech, then they can use that as a launching off point for greater power and greater tyranny. Same with freedom of the press and all those others. The Second Amendment makes no sense if you understand that in their interpretation. The proper construction, of course, it does, because you're protecting yourself against everybody, including an out-of-control government.
Yeah, that, as you pointed out, one of the biggest myths that many Americans, even foreigners who study American history, have about the U.S. Constitution is that the Constitution gives American citizens their rights, but the fact is, it doesn't give you anything. You know, it was stated in many areas that your rights are naturally given to you. What the Constitution is there for is to say what powers the government can do, but mostly what the government cannot do or what they can't infringe upon.
Yeah, I mean, they had enumerated powers, this very special list of powers. If it's not granted by the Constitution, they can't do that. And even within this list, we're putting further restrictions on it to make sure they can't do it.
Yep. While the Congress has and the Supreme Court have been tearing apart the enumerated powers for many years, one could argue that it was, you know, the early 1900s where really the United States, you know, turned into the social corporatist state it is today.
Yeah, and that was around 1937 when Helvering B. Davis was.
Yep.
So Madison concludes, quote, "For what purpose could the enumeration of particular powers be inserted if these and all others were meant to be included in the preceding general power? Nothing is more natural or common than to first use a general phrase and then to explain and qualify it by a recital of particulars." So they went directly against what the people who wrote and ratified the Constitution said it means. The Supreme Court does not have the power to change the meaning of the words of the Constitution. They can only apply it to the law under controversy.
And these are the people that say, we represent the Constitution, you know. Something tells me that every time a politician, you know, raises their right hand and has to say that oath to the Constitution, something tells me that secretly they're crossing their pinkies behind their back.
Okay, so he's got his 14 runners-up. He just puts them in chronological order. He didn't try to rank them or anything. He talks about the slaughterhouse cases and U.S. v. Cruikshank, which basically took the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment and basically said, nope, because the whole purpose of the Privileges and Immunities Clause is to clarify, look, when the Constitution says government can't do something because it's the right of the people, it means the states too.
I don't want to sound stupid or anything, but it's been a while since I've read the Constitution. Now, what's the 14th Amendment again?
The 14th Amendment was one of the ones passed right after the Civil War.
Oh, because I'm just going to say this, you know, some of the post, you know, Bill of Rights amendments are kind of silly.
Some of them are, but some of them are good. The 14th Amendment's kind of a mixed bag, but this is one of the good parts of it. Yeah, so the idea is, if the federal government can't infringe on your right to keep and bear arms, neither can the states, for example. But that lasted until 1873 with the slaughterhouse cases and 1875 with Cruikshank, so barely 10 years before they got rid of that. Chai Chang Ping, The United States, 1889, and you had the Chinese Exclusion Act. This was upheld by the court, who said that Congress has the right to restrict migration into the United States. The thing is, in that list of powers under Article 1, Section 8, they're not given the power over immigration, only naturalization. Naturalization is the process of becoming a U.S. citizen. It's not the process of just coming to America. 1890, we have Hans v. Louisiana. And so the 11th Amendment was one that was written to try and clarify the powers of the courts in Article 3. Well, what they claimed was that the 11th Amendment prevents citizens from suing their own states. And that's not what it says. What it says is that a citizen can sue their states when it's a controversy arising under the Constitution, as per Article 3. But what the Hans Court ruled was basically, nah, you can't. You can't. Now, people have done it since then, so it's been kind of sporadically used. But all right, 1934, Home Building and Loan Association v. Blaisdell allowed states to alter banking contracts after the fact. Now, Article 1, Section 10 is a list of restrictions of the states. The Constitution doesn't enumerate powers to the states like the federal government, but it does have restrictions, and one of those restrictions is that no state can interfere in the obligations of private contracts. Well, here they just went completely after it. They're like, yeah, these states, they altered the banking contracts after the fact. Yeah, they can do that. 1938's United States v. Caroline Products and 1955's Williamson v. Lee Optical. Basically, whatever was left of enumerated rights was gone there, and specifically economic liberties. And they just basically came out and said the government can promote special interests at the expense of the public.
Oh, yeah, and doesn't that violate the general welfare cause?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's...
And equal protection.
It's just funny how some of these politicians act. You know, I mean, I'm working on my comic strip, and I actually have all the drafts written for, you know, future, you know, stories in it. And one joke that I'm going to have is that President Stiller, who's the bumbling, incompetent president of the United States in 2018, he is bragging about how being a president means you got to be strong, you got to be intellectual, and you got to understand and represent the U.S. Constitution. And his secretary goes, well, did you read the Constitution? And he goes, I skimmed.
Yeah, I've actually talked to people who have gone to law school and taken constitutional law and said that the one thing they didn't do was actually read the Constitution.
Yeah, instead, the people who train future lawyers just read the parts of the Constitution that vaguely supports what they want, although just very vaguely, you know. A good example would be the post office. You know, so many leaders, you know, say, oh, we have to keep the post office because it's in the Constitution. The Constitution, from what I can gather, says the government can form it, but they don't have to, you know.
Right. It's not a requirement. They just have the power to do it. And they've also said that means that gives them a monopoly on the post office, and that's why they can stop Lysander Spooner from making his own post office. No, it doesn't say that at all. It doesn't give them the power to make any monopolies. They can just run a post office. Nothing that says they can stop other people from doing it.
A common argument that people have against capitalism is, well, if we have a free market, who's going to stop monopolies? And I'm saying, the state is the biggest monopoly out there, you know.
I had one on that Steve Shives video a couple of days ago, railing against both monopolies and competition.
Oh, yeah.
And like, wait a minute, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
Pick one. There's not a third option there.
Yeah, it's funny. If I were to form, you know, like my own little group, you know, and they say, you know, we're tired of all these drugs in Green Bay, so we're going to arm ourselves and we're going to raid anyone who we suspect as possessing drugs, you know, we'd be arrested and charged with breaking and entry and aggravated assault. But when you have a hat that says DEA on your hat in your chest vest, well, you get away with it.
So we have Wickard v. Filburn in 1942, up to Gonzales v. Raich in 2005. And this has to do with the Interstate Commerce Clause. Well, as I said in my constitutional lectures, regulate interstate commerce just meant to make it regular, not restrict. They not only said, no, they can restrict it, it doesn't have to be interstate, and it doesn't even have to be commercial.
Wow.
To be interstate commerce.
Wow.
Basically, government can regulate anything it wants.
Oh, yeah.
Baker v. Carr in 1962 basically required one person, one vote. And, of course, there's nothing in the Constitution that requires it, but this is a big honey, a lot of the pro-democracy people, and if you're not in favor of one person, one vote, you're this vicious, horrible, evil person. The thing is, this is exactly what allows for district gerrymandering. Because I'll get before then, the way it worked here in North Carolina is, we have a state house and a state senate. The house was drawn by population line, so one person, one vote. The senate districts were drawn up based on property values. So what that meant is that if you had an area where the property values were higher, you actually had fewer people in that district, and therefore your vote, quote-unquote, counted more. But that was because your property values were higher, and therefore you were paying more in taxes. And so that was a very essential balancing act to stop all of the problems of democracy and gerrymandering and things like that. This eliminated all that.
Oh, yeah, because here's the thing that I'm going to bring up. Now, before anyone points out, I am not supporting George W. Bush or anything, but what happened was that during the Bush, you know, and Gore election, you know, so many people were ranting, screaming, how come Bush won the elections? Gore got more popular votes. But if you look at the map of people who voted for Gore, you know, they used blue for the Democrats and red for the Republicans, which was Bush. Almost the entire United States was in red because look where the blue was. It was in areas like New York City, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles.
And also in richer areas. So if you want one person, one vote, then what you want is for the rich areas in the country to set policy for everyone else.
That's the reason why I don't support the idea of direct democracy any more than I support electoral votes, because in a direct democracy, all your important decisions are determined by, you know, the more populated areas. And it's been shown that, nothing against people who live in cities, but city folk don't always understand, you know, what's going on in other people. You know, it's easy for them to say, well, look, you know, I can go with this politician because I live here, but what applies to you may not apply to a small, you know, middle-class suburban person.
I think the Electoral College would work better with proportional representation.
Yeah.
Next one is Jones v. Alfred H. Mayer Company, 1968, and Runyon v. McCrary, 1976. Okay, follow the logic on this if you can. After the Civil War, the 13th Amendment said, no slavery. It can't have slavery. They're saying that since slavery is banned, that means that Congress has the power to ban anything that even seems discriminatory, including some of the things we've been talking about, private individuals refusing to sell something, like selling a cake to a homosexual couple.
Oh, wow.
All that is based on the fact that they banned slavery.
Not to mention, I wouldn't be surprised if they kicked African Americans off the property, because the fact of the matter is, many slaves, after they were freed, they stayed with their master, not because they were still in that slave mentality, but because, in all honesty, where were they supposed to go, you know?
Exactly. They didn't know anywhere else. All right, Buckley v. Valeo in 1976.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, this is the one, this is a famous one, that upheld campaign finance restrictions.
Oh, yeah.
On the grounds that political speech isn't protected by the First Amendment.
Oh, yeah. I get so tired of campaign finance reform because people always say, oh, you want those evil, greedy corporations to run the airway? It's like...
they already do.
That's not how it goes.
Yeah, and it even got to the point where you couldn't even get together with a group of people, pool your money, and buy your own TV commercials. That was what Citizens United overturned.
Yeah, that's what people failed to realize, you know... and in all honesty, I can see why Obama, you know, when Citizens United got approved, he was like, this has been a great tragedy for America because now it's a little bit difficult for these candidates, you know, to hold on to their monopolies. You know, I mean, that's the thing that people forget to realize, you know, despite all these campaign finance reform laws, the majority of them, people who are in the Senate and House of Representatives, they stay elected for as long as possible.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're saying that, well, Congress can restrict political speech. Political speech is what you're worried about the most with the First Amendment.
You know, if you make a non-political joke about Obama, like let's just say you make fun of the fact that he's from Hawaii, you know, that could be counted as political speech, and Congress, you know, could, if they had the right authorization, shut that down, you know.
Oh, the law that Citizens United overturned said that you couldn't even say his name within 60 days of an election.
Wow.
Chevron USA versus Natural Resources Defense Council Incorporated, 1984. This allowed administrative agencies to create regulations based on their interpretations of laws and effectively gave them the power to just make the laws themselves by just writing whatever they want.
Yeah, and as you pointed out in your constitutional lecture videos, that's not what the Founding Fathers wanted. James Madison, I forgot the exact quote, but he said, we need to interpret the Constitution by the way it was interpreted back in those days, you know.
Right. Like we mentioned this back when we covered Obamacare, everyone's talking about the contraceptive mandate. Look at the Affordable Care Act. It's not in there. The contraceptive mandate was just made up by the Obama administration after the fact. Congress didn't debate it, Congress didn't vote on it, and yet it became the law, and it's because of this ruling.
I think I saw a political cartoon which made fun of that. Some guy is holding the Constitution, and he's showing it at a cartoonish picture of Obama, and he says, but President Obama, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't do that. Then Obama takes out a pen, and he scribbles something on there, and he goes, now it does.
Yeah. McCleskey v. Kemp, 1987. Said that Georgia's application of the death penalty did not violate equal protection, even though it was heavily weighted in favor of blacks having a better chance of getting the death penalty. In other words, we've already talked about how you can't even bake a cake if it's discriminatory, but the courts can be discriminatory all they want, and well, that's just okay.
Yeah, it's... a common thing I really hate is when people say you're against the death penalty, then that means you want to treat, you know, all these serial murderers, you know, like little angels. It's like, no.
It's just you realize that there are moral principles here, plus the fact that it doesn't work.
Not to mention, I don't even trust the government to give out life sentences, let alone death sentences. You know, I mean, the benefit of an innocent going in with a life sentence is at least he has a chance to repeal it, whereas if you're executed, well...
of course, it's still too hard to come in and say, hey, look, I have evidence that I'm innocent after all. Even when you have a mound of evidence proving your innocence, as long as you got a fair trial, that's it.
here's something really sad, because my friend Jason, who's a former U.S. Army Ranger, he kind of helped me inspire my views of politics because, by the way, he's a former U.S. Army Ranger, and he says joining the military can make anyone a libertarian, especially when you see what he witnessed. But one of his friends has a relative who was recently given a life sentence for a completely bogus charge, and 5 years afterwards, their lawyers and all that and their private investigators filed a whole bunch of new evidence, and they presented it to the police and the court, and their answer was basically, that case is over, we're not taking any more new evidence anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they said. Yep, they said, we don't care that he's appealing, the case is over.
Morrison v. Olson, 1988. This is what allowed Congress to do that independent counsel thing like they did to try to go after Bill Clinton. Even though that's an executive power, and the president has executive powers and not Congress.
Yep.
One of our favorites, Kelo v. City of New London, 2005.
Oh, not familiar with that one.
Oh, that is the one where there were a bunch of homeowners in New London, Connecticut, and the government just wanted to take their home, seize them through eminent domain, and give it to Pfizer to make this big headquarters-type building that was going to stimulate the economy and everything. And it's not that they were against it. They were like, just let it pay us the market value for the homes. But no, they just wanted to take the property. Then they tried condemning the property and giving them a pittance for it, and they just kept resisting and resisting and resisting and resisting and resisting. Went all the way up to the Supreme Court, because the Fifth Amendment says that private property cannot be taken for public use without just compensation. Not only did the Supreme Court say that they don't have to give them just compensation, public use, they kind of redefined that to mean public good. I mean, a headquarters for Pfizer is not public use. A park is public use.
Yeah, it's going back to a lot of those anti-capitalists. A lot of people like to say, well, eminent domain is another reason why we need government. And I'm like, who conducts eminent domain?
Well, you see, if we didn't have the government, a gang could come around and steal your property.
Oh, okay. And what does that make the government?
Yeah, it's like everything they're worried about happening with anarchy is already happening with government.
Oh, yeah. As you pointed out, it's the special pleading argument. You know, it's like, okay, so it's wrong if a private company did this, but it's perfectly okay if the state does it. And they reply, well, the state's just different.
Yeah. And finally, we have NFIB v. Sebelius. We talked about this one, too. This is the famous Obamacare decision, which said that the individual mandate is okay because it's a tax. After Obama saying it's not a tax, and Congress saying it's not a tax, and they're saying it's not a tax, and how stupid, look at all these stupid people, all these stupid Fox News people saying it's a tax. It's not a tax, because if they had actually made it a tax, they couldn't have gotten the people behind it. But then the court comes along and says, it's a tax because that's the only way it can pass the Constitution. And also it kind of says that Congress can basically tax you to do anything. If you don't buy medical insurance, then they can levy a tax on you. So not only can they tax you when you do things like drive on the roads, they can tax you when you don't do things like don't buy medical insurance either. Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now.
So as an example of how the courts make our rights a yo-yo, after the 11th Circuit ruled last year that cops can't search a cell phone without a warrant, the 11th Circuit has now ruled that no warrant is needed to access cell phone location data. And this is over the case of the conviction of Quartavius Davis for a string of armed robberies. He's now serving a sentence of life in prison. The prosecution introduced his mobile phone location data with 11,606 location records over a 67-day period in 2010. But that data is protected by the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable searches and seizures. That's what the court said unequivocally last June. He would have to get a warrant to do it. But the 11th Circuit at the time agreed to reconsider that decision with a full roster of judges participating. So that finally happened, and guess what the result was. So here it is from Judge Frank Hull's majority opinion, quote, "The stored telephone records produced in this case and in many other criminal cases serve compelling governmental interests." What did I say, people?
Yeah, yeah.
What did I say?
Yeah, it's just...
Historical cell tower location records are routinely used to investigate the full gamut of state and federal crimes, including child abductions, bombings, kidnappings, murders, robberies, sex offenses, and terrorism-related offenses.
Yeah, stuff that's almost never likely going to happen to you.
Well, and it's not, that's not the stuff we're really concerned about. We're concerned about them getting the records for all sorts of other uses that don't have anything to do with crimes. So he went on, quote, "Davis had at most a diminished expectation of privacy." There's another bad one right there. Expectation of privacy. That has nothing to do with the Fourth Amendment, people. It's not what you expect to happen. These are property rights. If it's your property, your expectations don't matter. They can't do it. And it also goes on to say, quote, "The disclosure of such records pursuant to a court order authorized by Congress served substantial government interest and, given the strong presumption of constitutionality applicable here, any residual doubts concerning the reasonableness of any arguable search should be resolved in favor of the government." There's another one. Presumption of constitutionality. If you can't absolutely show that the law is unconstitutional to cover every last little twist their diseased minds can cook up, then it's constitutional.
Yeah, not to mention, as we pointed out earlier, the government gets to decide what's constitutional or not, you know?
Yeah.
So even if you do prove, say, it's unconstitutional and provide all this evidence to support, they'll just say, "Hey, judicial branch, can you back us up?" And the judicial branch will twirl their fingers, say some magic words, and they'll say, "Bada bing, bada boom, it's constitutional now."
Yeah. So we've got all these courts saying they can't do it without a warrant, but now we have one saying they can, and maybe this will go on up to the Supreme Court.
Inconsistency.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's another reason why the statism is like a religion. Inconsistent through and through.
Oh, but you have to obey the law, and ignorance of the law is no excuse, even though none of us can agree what the law says to begin with.
Yeah, that's another funny thing is I've seen some people do is when a police officer arrests someone for a very, very vague law, they ask them, "Well, officer, do you know the law too?" And they're like, "Not really. I'm just told it's against the law, so I gotta enforce it."
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pagosity.tv.
More news on the copyright piracy file sharing front. And if you wonder why we keep covering this, well, we keep trying to tell you how this puts all of us at risk, not just file sharers. And here's some more good information about that from Torrent Freak. They're talking about domain suspensions, domain seizures, and search engines downrankings, and how they make a less safe online environment for all of us. And we've talked about this before, how they cut down the Pirate Bay. They come up again. They pop up with a different ISP. They take away their domain name. They come up with, you know, thepiratebay.org, .se, .sn, .whatever.
And more dumb anti-pirate laws.
It doesn't work. They can't prove any harm from piracy anyway, but these are very dangerous to the rest of us, and so it takes these section by section. So you have domain blocks, and we've talked about these, and it's been cases where even just one infringing page lets them take down the entire domain. Even if other people have information on that same website that isn't infringing, that's perfectly legitimate. So, like, I have a lot of my content up on the Pirate Bay, and I like to have that to help distribute it and get it out there more. When they take down the Pirate Bay, I lose out.
Yeah, I just don't care about anti-pirate laws anymore. They're so stupid.
And, of course, people are getting around the blocks. You can easily do that with a VPN. I saw some Canadian politician bragging about how, yeah, we passed these domain blocking laws and ISP laws and their version of six strikes or whatever it was. And look at this, piracy by these Canadian individuals went down like, you know, 13% or whatever it was. And I'm like, or they just started using a VPN and you don't know they're doing it.
Yeah, that's funny because I read a lot of political cartoons and I mentioned them earlier, but I saw another funny political cartoon which made fun of tough piracy laws, which shows Blackbeard, some French pirate, and another guy in a prison cell. Ellen Blackbeard goes, I ended up in the slammer because I raided a French ship. Yep, the other guy goes, I got in prison because I raided Port Royal and burnt the entire place to the ground. And the other guy said, I downloaded a VPN to my internet server.
Well, what's worse than the blocks are the suspensions and seizures of domains. Because what that does is they say, okay, that domain isn't yours anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But it makes the domain available for other people to do. And we've seen this with sites like EZTV and Kickass Torrents.
Kickass, that's a good website.
It was like kickass.to, and then it had to be kickass.so, and now it's kat.cr or something like that. And the problem is, they leave those old domain names behind. They kind of go back in the pool so other people can do them. Other people grab those domain names, set up a clone site, except that since they're not run by the same people, you don't know if they're run as well. They may have ads that have malware on them, or they may even be deliberately putting malware up there.
Oh, yeah.
Or there might be phishing sites that ask for your credit card or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And these are huge vectors for malware. The thing about malware is, it's kind of like vaccines. The more computers out there that are infected with malware, even if the rest of us are using virus protection and all that, it just increases the likelihood of the malware getting to us.
Yep.
Then they mentioned the search engine downranking. And this is kind of related to what I just said, because they say, okay, this site is infringing. You have to downrank it. Well, guess what? People are looking for these services, so they downrank these. It's these less reliable clones that actually get up and end up higher in the list. So people aren't going to the real site. They're going to the one that might be malicious, because they didn't tell them to downrank that one.
Another classic example of unintended consequences.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and so Torrent Freak says, quote, with every new seizure, suspension, and blockade, more scammers will see opportunities to make money by tricking users to sign up to bogus services while obtaining their credit card details by deception. Whenever concern is expressed for the well-being of internet users supposedly exposed to malware on pirate sites, at some point, that concern should be extended to those subjected to malware and identity fraud as a result of anti-piracy strategies. Yeah, don't hold your breath.
I mean, I've got nothing to say because, I mean, we've kind of covered topics like this before.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, it's worth pointing out the harm that they do, because it was a, well, you just want the pirates to have free reign. Well, I don't want malware going around all over the place. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Because even if you're like me, even if you're knowledgeable about this stuff and know the safeguards to take, ain't nothing perfect. Ain't nothing perfect. And the more it, no matter what, it's just a matter of time before some malware gets in. Hopefully, by taking all these precautions, you can just extend it out so that it functionally never happens. But the more malware that's out there that's trying to get in, the shorter amount of time that is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually fell victim to malware and we had to take our computer to an expert to get it repaired because I was trying to download this one program for a game and my computer software, it said the site was perfectly reliable and fine. But when I downloaded it, next thing you know, Crash City.
Yeah. Well, and there's always bugs and security holes being found in browsers, being found in Flash, being found in all this other software. I mean, you just don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. People like to make fun of Norton security, but the fact of the matter is there is no perfect security wireframe. Every firewall program has holes that if malware is well-programmed, it'll find.
But there are better ones than Norton.
Yeah.
Don't use Norton.
Yeah.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. I don't know what it is about modern progressives and social justice warriors. They just seem to want to take away anything that can even be a minor challenge or inequality so they don't hurt children's feelings. Cases in point, Professor Adam Swift of the University of Warwick and Harry Brighouse of the University of Madison, Wisconsin. They say that good parenting is giving some kids an unfair advantage over kids who don't have good parents.
What?
Yeah. If you do a good job raising your kid, you're disadvantaging these other kids because they don't have the same opportunities that your kids do.
Okay, that is complete bullcrap. Okay, here's something. What if you're being a good parent to your kids, not because you're giving them an unfair advantage, but because you yourself had bad parents and you don't want your kids to go through that? My friend Jason, his family is very tightly knit, and they're one of those families, that keep every single, record of every single, family conversation set. And his great grandfather came here from Norway, and he was a really, strict but firm parent, to his kids. And he did that because he said, where I come from, I had a terrible place, where I came from. My family was over religious. They wouldn't let me learn anything that wasn't that was secular, because they were very religious people. And he said, I came to America so I could get away from that, and I don't want you to experience what I experienced. By their definition, he's giving his kids an unfair advantage.
So Professor Adam Swift says, quote, one way philosophers might think about solving the social justice problem would be by simply abolishing the family. If the family is this source of unfairness in society, then it looks plausible to think that if we abolish the family, there would be a more level playing field.
Yeah, there's a difference between criticizing the nuclear family and saying, let's just get rid of families altogether, considering the fact that that kind of sort of violates everything we know about human social behavior.
Yeah. And he does kind of grudgingly say, well, no, we can't do that. Not really because he doesn't think it's a good idea, but because no one else would go along with it. He says, quote, nearly everyone who has thought about this would conclude that it is a really bad idea to be raised by state institutions unless something has gone wrong.
You know, it's funny because Travis told me this one funny joke, about the whole classic excuse. Well, if everyone was jumping off a bridge, would you do it? And he said, well, yeah, because if everyone is jumping off a bridge, that's usually a sign that there's a reason to do so. Like the bridge is on fire.
Yeah, that was an XKCD comic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, cool.
But he and Brighouse did say it was about, quote, thinking about what it was we wanted to allow parents to do for their children and what it was that we didn't need to allow parents to do for their children if allowing those activities would create unfairness for other people's children.
So basically, their ideal society would be everyone is stupid and idiotic and everyone, talks ghetto like that.
But check it out. The top of their list of things that parents should not be allowed to do is send their kids to private school.
Oh, really? Yeah. Personally, I wish I went to a private school, because the public school I went to, I hated it.
And they also want to eliminate, quote, inheritance and other predominantly economic ways of conferring advantage.
Oh, yeah, the classic inheritance tax, meaning, yeah, that's actually one thing that one communist college student asked on Milton Friedman one time that says, I think, we would make a much more just world if we would say that after you die, everything you own immediately becomes state property so they can redistribute it.
And what was Friedman's reply?
He responded that, well, if you do that, you basically destroy people's incentive, to invest in their money. So before they die, they're going to spend it all away and you're going to have nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I would do. If I'm a rich millionaire and I'm about to die and I realize all my assets are going to be seized by the state, I'm going to just shut down everything and I'm going to give all my money away and that's going to be it,
And all this is in their book, Family Values, The Ethics of Family-Child Relationships, which they say will, quote, explain why a child's interest in autonomy severely limits parents' right to shape their children's values and why parents have no fundamental right to confer wealth or advantage on their children.
That's just bull crap. Who gave these guys their college degrees anyway, their professorate degrees anyway?
The way colleges are done nowadays, who knows? But basically, they would rather children be equal in idiocy than unequal in greatness.
Yeah, it's like, why are people so obsessed, you know, with, like, that whole equality thing? Why are they so obsessed with material equality, you know? That's actually another reason why I hate communism and all of its philosophies, because when you break it down to it, it's little more than petty jealousy. Yeah, it's, oh my god, that guy has a nicer computer than me. I want the government to redistribute the wealth so I can have that computer. It's like, that's what you sound like, people.
But if you do that, then no one ends up with computers. And you end up standing in long lines just to get bread.
It's funny because communists accuse capitalists of being selfish. Well, in my honest opinion, jealousy and selfishness go one in one, you know?
How is it selfish to say just let everyone keep what they earn?
And not to mention the mentality of communism, you know, that, well, if the proletariats don't have it, the bourgeoisie can't have it. Doesn't that sound kind of similar to that one little kid, you know, who you knew in preschool, you know, who would hog all the toys, and when the teacher approached him and said, no, you have to share it, he would say, well, if I can't have it, then no one can, and then he smashes it. That's the same mentality.
History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. And now it's time to deep fry this week's biggest bogon emitter.
Ooh, I hope he tastes like chicken.
Ha 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 ha. And this week it goes to Mother Jones. You might remember them.
Oh, yeah.
An article of theirs got biggest bogon emitter 2 years ago when they used deceptive statistics to say that no armed citizen had ever stopped a mass shooting. They just defined a mass shooting as being a number of people killed that was greater than what happened in any mass shootings that were stopped by armed citizens.
Yeah, just...
because fewer people are killed when they're stopped by an armed citizen. So they just set the bar higher than that and said, see, it's never happened.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if we covered this directly, but they're also the ones who deceptively edited the 911 call from George Zimmerman to make it sound like he was racially profiling Trayvon Martin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, where they said, you see, this proves George Zimmerman's racist. And then play a recording where Zimmerman says he looks black. But what they don't tell you is that the full recording was he was talking with the 911 person. The person says, well, what's his ethnicity? Is he white, Caucasian, you know, Latino? And he goes, oh, he looks black, I think.
Yeah, they cut out the dispatcher asking him that question. Well, this time they're going against James Franco because he actually said good things about his time working at McDonald's.
Oh, yeah, I heard that article.
Well, here's part of what Franco said, quote, when I was hungry for work, they fed the need. I still love the simplicity of the McDonald's hamburger and its salty fries. Is it just me or is anyone else reading its experience in the voice of the Pepperidge Farm guy? I still love the simplicity of the McDonald's hamburger and its salty fries.
Yep.
After reading Fast Food Nation, it's hard for me to trust the grade of the meat, but maybe once a year, while on a road trip or out in the middle of nowhere for a movie, I'll stop by McDonald's and get a simple cheeseburger. Light, airy, and satisfying.
Fast Food Nation, that was that documentary.
Yeah.
I tend to take movies like that with a grain of salt because they can be a little biased in their own right, you know?
Yeah, I think the whole thing was pretty much bogus. But anyway, he's talking about the fact that when he was struggling to get work as a fledgling actor, at least he was able to get a job at McDonald's and make some money and help himself along, right? What's wrong with that? Well, Mother Jones called it a, quote, offensive nostalgia trip.
Oh, really? Oh, oh, he's being offensive to people because he had a good time at working at McDonald's, and that's offensive to people who didn't have a good time.
I guess. They said, quote, in the midst of plummeting sales, pressure to bump wages, and an apparent gastronomic identity crisis, which is a link to another bogus story of theirs about how saying that McDonald's said they would never start serving kale when they never said that, and then someone asked them and they said that that's something they would consider, and they were taking the fact that McDonald's is always asking questions about what customers might want and what new foods to get, and acting like that was a bad thing.
Oh, yeah, we're listening to our customers? You're evil!
Yeah, but if the zeitgeist is customers want healthier food, and McDonald's says, okay, let's serve healthier food, what the frickin' frack is wrong with that?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, Mother Jones is so... And I can relate to this because I used to work at Walmart, and I'll admit it wasn't the best job, and there was stuff I hate about it, but it was a valuable experience to me. It taught me what to do and what not to do, you know? And I wanted work, you know, and I was proud to know that I was making some money now.
Remember when you could say nice things about an employer and no one would call it offensive? Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yeah, and that's a thing, you know, because I have another temporary job, you know, working for a place called St. Vincent de Paul. And actually, I rather would work at Walmart than there, you know, not because St. Vincent de Paul is bad. It's just that... I mean, like, just to tell you something, yesterday, I had the one guy who I was worked with, he was being so rude to me, I actually started crying, and I requested to change another department, and they agreed.
Wow. Well, at least they agreed. At least I didn't make you keep working with him. So anyway, they say he, quote, seems to forget that being a dropout from an elite university set him apart from most hourly workers at McDonald's. Actually, if you're in that situation, it's a bit harder to get a job at McDonald's, because they want people who are gonna stay there and not just look at it as a thing to get while they're looking for another job.
Yeah, and I find that line offensive because I'm a college dropout, technically. I mean, I didn't go to, like, a fancy college. I went to a tech school, but I mentally couldn't handle it, you know? And that's what I hate about people who say, oh, you dropped out of college, you're doomed to failure. Because, you know, dropping out of the tech school, it was both the hardest and the most relief I ever experienced and all that, too. Because, you know, on one hand, yeah, I dropped out of college, and that's not something you want to say to people, but at the same time, it was a big burden off my back because I had a lot of problems I was going through.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's the best thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing that people forget is that contrary to what, you know, they always try to sell us, college is not for everyone. College is more for if you want to go into a very special, you know, field of work.
Sure, yeah. So they close off, quote, to everyone out there fighting for a living wage, this experience could offer some hope. After all, with the right attitude, McDonald's can be a stepping stone on your path to Hollywood stardom, just as it was for James Franco.
Oh, great. The whole living wage thing, you know.
Mother Jones. Hey, you know, that would make a pretty good expletive. Mother Jones.
Yeah.
You know, someone does something dumb. Mother Jones, that was stupid.
Yeah.
Or there's loud crash. Mother Jones, what was that? Let's do it. Let's make that a thing.
Yeah, they're almost as dumb as Saloon. Then again, Saloon is so dumb that when it was given a test and it was compared to the dumbest person in the world passed.
Yeah. So in addition to becoming an expletive now, hopefully, Mother Jones also gets some measure of recognition as this week's biggest bogon emitter. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to Me Gotta Go over this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Wow, you can do that despite having a cold.
I try. And this week it goes to the FBI. And first we have to cover some history. You've probably heard the song Louie Louie by the Kingsmen.
Oh, I love that song.
Jack Eli, it was their lead singer. When they recorded, the reason why it's such a trashy recording was that they didn't have a lot of money. They spent like $50 for the studio time. They had to do it all in one take with him and the band and everything.
Oh, wow.
The microphones were up in the ceiling, and he had to sing really loud to just try to be heard over them. And they thought what they were doing was a warm-up. It ended up being the only take, and it was the one that was released, so...
Wow.
As a result, the lyrics ended up being sort of unintelligible. So what do you think inevitably happened?
Let me guess, they assumed it had some sort of satanic message in it.
Well, more sexual than satanic, but yeah, the pareidolia set in, and everyone just knew the lyrics were offensive and dirty and raunchy and trashy. Lots of complaints came in. Indiana Governor Matthew Welch banned the song, and that prompted an FBI investigation. The FBI actually spent 2 years investigating these lyrics and determined that the lyrics were completely unintelligible.
Wow, that actually happened. It sounds like a plot to a 1980s B dance movie starring Kevin Bacon.
You know, that was based on a true story.
Oh, really? It
Footloose
was?
Yeah, Footloose was based on a true story.
Oh, what was it based off of?
Well, it was one of many towns that had actually banned dancing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and because of all of the publicity around the movie, they actually got the law overturned, although I think they still said you couldn't do it within 100 yards of a church or something.
Yep. The church is the exception.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, that was a true story. Now, everything I have just told you has been known for years, but the FBI never released the actual document, but 2 weeks ago, Jack Eli died, and now they've released it. Some of it's been redacted, but mostly it's there, and we can really see how stupid the FBI was being.
Yeah, it's just... You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of that one incident where the FBI, you know, after hearing that the Soviets were interested in telekinesis, they set up a whole committee to study ESP and the paranormal. And after spending like $20 million and 10 years of research, they concluded that ESP was impossible.
And James Randi said, gee, I could have told them never $1.75.
Yep.
So they published the letters they got, and they're as idiotic as you'd think. And four of them give what they're oh so certain that these poisonously offensive lyrics actually are, and of course they don't agree, and what they think the lyrics are isn't even that obscene, and a lot of them are just surreal. Like,
oh,
what
did they think it said again? Because I always heard the song pretty well. What did they think it said?
Oh, I'd have to scroll down to see it, and I don't feel like doing right now, but like one of them, the lyric is, I smell the rose in her hair, and one of them thought it said, I feel my bone in her hair, and it's like, oh, why would anyone write? That makes no sense.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, I mean, it's like if it's trying to be like, you know, a slang term for a male genitals,
yeah,
you know.
For an erection, yeah, but why would it be in your head?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, some musicians, you know, do intentionally, you know, put stuff like that in there, but here's the thing, it usually makes sense, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's just...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, either this guy doesn't know how the human sexual reproductive course doesn't work, or he's got some sort of hair fetish, but...
I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know...
That kind of thing says more about the person who's making the interpretation than it does the lyrics.
Yeah, you know... Yeah, there was actually, going back to the furry fandom, there was a funny famous furry called Uncle Kage said, you know, he was on an interview, you know, about the furry fandom, and this person kept on asking, what's it with the furry fetish? What's it with the furry fetish and all that? And finally, Uncle Kage looks at the person and says, why are you asking so many questions about sex? Is there a problem? Yeah, he trolled them, basically. Yeah, which I agree, you know, if I'm a...
Oh, there is this one passage from the probability brooch, which is great. Someone makes an allusion to people carrying around their guns, you know, like it's their sexual organs or something, and one of the characters says to him, well, what's worse, someone who thinks of a gun as a sexual organ or someone who wants to take everyone's sexual organs away?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that boner makes me uncomfortable, so we're going to cut off all the male penises.
Don't give him any ideas.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about what's idiotic about this. Aside from the fact that we have freedom of speech in this country and they shouldn't even been wasting taxpayer money on this in the first place, here's the thing. They spent 2 years playing the song, and as you can see, they sent it to numerous labs. They were playing it backwards and forwards and at different speeds and all this sort of stuff, trying to figure out what the lyrics are. It took them 2 years to realize that they could just ask for the lyrics from the copyright office.
Yeah, that's
also, apparently it had never occurred to them to just ask Eli what it was that he sang.
Yeah, you know.
And you want to know what the stupidest thing about it is? The stupidest thing that's always been about this?
What's that?
The song is a cover.
Oh, wow.
Louie Louie had been written about 10 years earlier by Richard Berry. He has probably the most, the second famous version. It's the one where you have the guys in the background going, da-da-dum, da-da-da-da-dum. And he sings it perfectly intelligibly. It was also covered by both Rockin' Robin Roberts and Paul Revere and the Raiders before being recorded by the Kingsmen, and all three of those earlier versions are completely intelligible. All they had to do was listen to the earlier songs.
Not to mention, I remember hearing somewhere that Louie Louie is partially based on an old English folk song or something like that.
I don't remember the whole story. There's something about Richard Berry having the idea for the song at a restaurant and writing it on the back of a napkin. Because of something they were talking about, it might have been the old folk song or something.
Yeah, it was apparently a folk song that was popular among English naval men when they were deployed at Port Royal in Jamaica.
Yeah, because he's sailing on the sea. And the name of the boat is the Louie Louie.
Not to mention, you know, when they're using words like me Costa ship and all that, that's how, you know, poor, you know.
Yeah, well, it's a Jamaican character.
Yep.
And so the verses, the chorus is just Louie Louie, me gotta go over and over again. The verses go, a fine little girl, she waits for me catch the ship across the sea. I sail the ship all alone, I never think I'll make it home. 3 days and nights, me sail the sea, me think of girl constantly. On the ship, I dream she there, I smell the rose in her hair. Me see Jamaica moon above, it won't be long, me see me love. Me take her in my arms and then, I tell her I'll never leave her again. It's actually pretty sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a love song, you know, it's a little love song.
Yeah, and he's longing for his love because he misses her so much and he wants to be home so bad. But to this day, bands are prohibited from playing Louie Louie in many venues because everyone is just so sure that the lyrics are so offensive.
It kind of reminds me back in the 90s, because I do remember this from when I was a very, very young kid, when the Italian band Eiffel 65, sorry if I'm spelling it wrong, released that song Blue, and everyone was misreading the lyrics, you know, even though basically, you know, the lyrics were gibberish. It was just them going, you know, doing like ba-da-di, ba-da-da, and all that. Everyone kept insisting that there was a message in there, which there wasn't.
Yeah. Oh, you mean that one? What was that one? Obla-di, obla-da, life goes on.
No, it's like the song goes da 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 da. That song.
Okay, I don't know which one you're talking about, but anyway, yeah, there's all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As you pointed out in one of your really old videos, it's Pareidolia.
Oh yeah.
But speaking of which, one of the songs you used, I actually heard it at work one time. The one. Yeah, the one where apparently if you say it backward, it says, you know, like Hail Satan or something. I forgot the name of it.
Oh.
No, but yeah.
There's a bunch of them in that video, yeah.
Yeah.
And more besides. I didn't include anywhere near all of them, but...
I like that thing you did that almost did where, like, you backmask it, but we don't see the lyrics, so you're up to it. And I did hear Satan, but I also heard the word sexy and Sin City.
Yeah, I mean, you could put up all sorts of things in there and make people...
Heard a devilish thing, but Sin City was also a comic made by Frank Miller, you know, so...
Well, Sin City is the nickname for Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, that too, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just like people who try to say Puff the Magic Dragon, or what's that Creedence song, Looking Out My Back Door, that those songs are about drug use, and they completely aren't.
Or here's another one. Here's the one where it's vice versa, where everyone thinks, you know, the song Summer 69 is about nostalgia. Yeah, no joke. Bryan Adams flat out confessed... Summer 69 is about the particular sexual act. He confessed.
Oh, what's that one song? We call it the Stalker song. I'm trying to, that one Police song where every breath you take, every move you make, I'll be watching you.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks, oh, that's such a nice little love song. And Sting actually came out and said, no, that song is about a creepy guy who won't leave this woman alone.
Oh, wow, yeah.
He's the bad guy. No, this isn't a love song. People, don't be so friggin' dysfunctional. So after 2 years, and who knows how many tax dollars, investigating a song that's about as offensive as a Dr. Seuss book, when it could have been resolved in no time just by requesting the lyric sheet... And they could have avoided not only the bogus hysteria around the song, but also the decades of issues afterwards, issues that still continue to this day. After 40 years of this crap, how can we not call the FBI this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this... No, SFX edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Chris Hangartner for joining me.
Thank you, Shane. Now I need to get something for my allergies.
Oh, I know the feeling. Until next time, here's a quote from Neil Peart of Rush. Now there's no more oppression, for they passed a noble law, and the trees are all kept equal by hatchet, axe, and saw. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, and Derivatives 3.0 imported license.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Oh, that's a nice little poem.
Yeah, it's The Trees by Rush. Go look up the lyrics online. It's really good.